IC4 listeners, Anna here. Before you get into this week's episode, I just wanted to give you a quick heads up, quick content warning for the F-word section, particularly the latter half. If you have any worries about sexual assault, it does get quickly mentioned. No detail, but if that's something you think will upset you, please feel free to skip the last section. And we'll see you next week.
6.5%, was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round-by-round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Anna and Chris. I'm Chris. She's Anna. Hi, Anna. How you doing? It's been a long time since I last saw you.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Just to let listeners know, Chris and I saw each other last night, because apparently hanging out on the podcast, not enough. Mm-hmm. And apparently we have not had enough stress, sports-related stress from Canucks, so we went to see the Whitecaps play. Mm-hmm. And Chris, what did you say before kickoff, about the Whitecaps?
So, let's rewind a little bit. You pointed out to me that maybe the Vancouver Whitecaps will be like the Vancouver Canucks and wait until the final 90 seconds to score a goal. And I'm like, no. The way the Whitecaps seem to be going about things, they'll score within the first 90 seconds, and then it's hold on through the rest of the match. Well, neither occurred. but it was such a one-sided affair. Like, we were talking about how Austin, I think they had one opportunity, if you could call it that, on the Whitecaps goaltender, Ilya Takahoya. And in the press or post-game, not press conference, but radio broadcast, head coach Vanni Sartini had actually apparently commented to his team, "We're playing so well, I could have been in the net and it wouldn't have been a problem." Like, that's how defensively structured Austin was. Vancouver took out their center back and put in a striker. Like, and in soccer, three or four defensemen is generally what a team will build structure around. The Whitecaps had two in a game that was 0-0. Like, they were going for it. Unfortunately, they didn't get the result. But I think you cursed the Whitecaps.
Yeah, I love that I was trying to blame you for setting me up for failure. Mm-hmm. That Vancouver was the most productive team in the league. And then we got to see a 0-0 draw. But yeah, apparently it was my fault. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I mean, and Vancouver had, you know, a goal called back and then a sure penalty, not called a penalty. So, I mean, it felt very Vancouver Canucks, you know.
It was very coded. There was even almost a line brawl, so.
That's true. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it was a hockey night in Canada. It happened to be taking place at BC Place. Speaking of the Vancouver Canucks, Anna, this is not a sad episode.
No.
It could have been. Like, there was the potential, the way things sort of started to go, that this could have been a sad episode. It could have happened, who knows, like a day later too. But it is a happy episode. Why? Because, spoiler alert, the Vancouver Canucks beat the Nashville Predators. They're moving on. They're going to be taking on the Edmonton Oilers. We're going to talk more about that in this episode, obviously. Happy, happy, joy, joy. And me being the prognosticator, Canucks in six.
Yeah, you said it.
I just know what I'm talking about. Even though I tried to walk it back and say, don't want them to go back to Nashville. Well, gosh darn it, they went to Nashville and got the job done.
Mm-hmm. Easy to win in Nashville, it turns out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And plus, they were like, oh, that Chris guy. He needs to have more confidence. Let's do him.
Let's do him
a solid and get him the dub.
Yeah.
It was all about me. But yeah, no, it's been good times if you're a Canucks fan. And we now have a schedule. That was the other thing. There wasn't a guarantee we would have a schedule and time to record. Like, the NHL quite literally published it minutes ago. We're recording on Sunday evening. The fact that it has taken so long is just nuts, but we'll talk about that.
Yeah, when we saw each other Saturday evening, it was like, I presume we're not playing game one tomorrow and we can record, but we didn't know for sure.
Yeah. Oh, and you know, I think the thought was that the first game would get underway on the Tuesday, but no, it's happening here in Vancouver on Wednesday. Beyond that, I do want to give a shout out to the Canucks community that's on Threads. Canucks Twitter, it's well established. It's a thing. In fact, it's like, you know, perpetual motion. I don't think Canucks Twitter will ever go away, but Canucks Threads is in its infancy, and there's some, you know, pretty solid people as part of the community. I know a few of them are actually tuning in, so shout out to all of you new listeners from Canucks Threads, and shout out to all of you from Canucks Twitter and wherever you happen to be. I mean, we obviously, being the longest running show, love all three of our listeners.
Big time. Hi, Mom.
Well, four. Your mom, too. Hi, Anna's mom. But you know what? Let's get into the actual episode with Rewind. So Vancouver continued their way of not necessarily getting pucks on Saros in game five. That's not to suggest Vancouver wasn't attempting to do so. Nashville, again, was doing such a good job at blocking shots. But, you know, fast forwarding through that game where it was, you know, very much back and forth. When Zadorov decided it was time to go coast to coast and scores that like sharp angle goal, the roof blows off, you know, Rogers Arena. Did you think that was enough, Anna?
I'll be honest, no. And like, if obviously it's been a pretty low scoring, low event series in general, and it does seem like Zadorov is one of the key offensive highlights out of that series, but you just think that can't be it, right? Like, the fact that it was Zadorov assist to Quinn Hughes, you just think, like, surely that can't be it for a game of, like, well, playoff hockey, but...
Sure, but, you know, to that point, the game was very much even. Like, there wasn't really any real, you know, advantage to one team or the other. Unless you say the advantage is the Nashville having kept Vancouver, you know, off the stat sheet in regards to shots. Vancouver, though, did come out in the first period, you know, full bear. Like, that first period was a really good period of hockey. Vancouver didn't capitalize on the chances they probably should have. Second period, Nashville settled down and probably had a more, you know, the more dominant period in that regard. But when Zadorov scored, I thought that was it. I honestly did. I thought, oh my goodness, the Canucks are going to pull this out. You had, you know, Cialas in net, and Cialas is playing stellar hockey.
Yeah.
Looked confident, looked calm. Like, he looked like a veteran in that crease. The problem is that the Vancouver Canucks PK, very stellar through the series, finally faltered. Mm-hmm. And the goal that was scored by Roman Josi to tie it up was not like stake in the heart, but like the stake was out and it was touching against the skin. Like, it really felt like Vancouver got a goal. I don't know if they're, the way this game is going, they're going to find a way to get another. So how do they win this?
Yeah. Okay. So, but what was your view of the goal? Or should I have like air quotes around it?
Oh, yeah. So the difficulty I have here is that the NHL has created a conundrum with how it's trying to use, you know, coaches' reviews as a means to ensure time wasting doesn't occur. Like, I mean, I long-winded way of saying that the NHL created a problem where a team doesn't get a fair opportunity to go and have that one review.
See,
because I mean, what we're getting at here is that, was there goaltender interference? And when you look at the overhead shot, the puck is past Cialas, but it's not moving anywhere. And I don't know who it was that came crashing into the crease, but there was clear contact between Nashville Predator player and Cialas. And goaltender interference. Problem is, calling the ice is goal. Good goal.
Yeah.
And when you look at that overhead angle, an argument could be made that, well, actually, it was, I think, Dieter Seppi that was also sort of on the ice or near the loss that he had contributed.
Yeah. And I would say my view is that that contact was after the contact.
I don't disagree. But see, this is the problem, is that if the Canucks challenge that goal and they lose, well, not only is that a power play goal, but guess who gets to go back on the power play? Like, to me, it's not a situation that you can conceivably put yourself into in this type of game at this point. Like, if it was the go-ahead goal, I actually feel a little bit different. I think Vancouver goes and takes a shot. Because if it's a go-ahead goal, yeah, it's going to suck to be down potentially by two, but you'd rather not be down by one. This is where you have to have confidence that your team can go and get you that second goal. I just didn't share that confidence Pocket and the bench had.
I have several thoughts on this. One, I would say, yes, you're probably right. The system is imperfect. I mean, what they have in cricket is that you get three, reviews per, innings. I think that's valid. I think in hockey it could just very well be one. And if you're right, you keep the review. Mm-hmm. If you're wrong, it goes away. That's it. You're done. Well,
Leagues do it differently. You get one, there was some discussion that, because in the NHL, you can have as many as you want. You can lose as many as you want.
Yeah.
It's power play awarded to the opposite team. Well, why not take the timeout away? Give the timeout as being,
I don't know if the timeout's that valuable, though. Also, I do think that the system of whatever, call on the ice, has more weight. I do agree with that system. And, you're right that there may not have been enough, sizable evidence to overturn it. But, keeping that game at 1-0 would have been huge, I think.
Oh, especially no doubt.
Late on. You're in the third period already.
Halfway through. How much time? Let's see. So 7:15 was the goal. So this is the thing. Let's say you do win that.
But it's no goal. Wouldn't you have trust in the PK? That's a first.
Fair enough.
I understand the risk, and I also obviously there was this is the second goal in the series from Nashville that's controversial. Obviously, the goal on Sunday was not challengeable. Mm-hmm. That's another part of the system that maybe is worth looking at. Why is kicking motion not a challengeable?
Because the NHL has no clue what a kicking motion is.
But they also have no clue what goaltender interference is, which, honestly, drives me crazy. There's been so many instances in Canucks games over the last couple of years, and that goes both ways, where Canucks have endangered the opposition goaltender and Canucks goalie has been, actually, and I'm not talking about the lives being endangered, but, at risk of injury, and the goal stands. The NHL has no idea what goaltender interference is either, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, regardless, Josi gets that goal, daggers pressed against the skin, Carrier goes, pushes it on in. We saw Vancouver do the, not impossible, but the significantly unexpected, where they got goals with the goal empty. Unfortunately, you need control of the puck to pull your goaltender. And Nashville figured this out. Instead of giving Vancouver the opportunity to maintain control, they're like, we're going to go and we're going to prevent you from having that opportunity. And unfortunately for Vancouver, they simply just ran out of time before Silas gets to the bench. So this obviously takes the series back to Nashville. The barn is to which I did not want to see the Vancouver return to. It caused your, Canucks in five prognostication to become invalid. Mm-hmm. So Anna doesn't know what she's talking about, proven
very clearly
by this loss. Oh my goodness, was this game stressful? I don't know really how to summarize my feelings, because stressful, even sort of in my estimation, really sells what I was feeling short.
Yeah. I was incredibly tense, not least because, I mean, the game, that was another reason why I did not want the game to go back to Nashville, is that it would start at 4 p.m. Pacific.
Yeah, that sucked.
Which was, yeah, not ideal for the end of a work week. Yeah. It did feel, once again, like Vancouver with a team on top. But also, at the same time, it didn't feel like, oh, we're going to score. Like, we're close to scoring. Mm-hmm. It was just like, we have more chances.
But that's the thing. Vancouver, I wouldn't say had more chances. Like, yes, Vancouver actually had a much more dominant third period than we had seen them have of any period, I think, through the series. But the first period, like, I felt that the Vancouver Canucks weren't getting pucks towards Saros. Like, again, the problem is not so much, you know, it's getting the shot through. Credit to Nashville, who threw everything that they could possibly throw in front of a puck. But then Vancouver was really still trying to go for that pretty shot, you know, that extra pass.
Which, yeah, really, it seems like times they had worked out the whole thing of you can miss the net and Saros doesn't necessarily do well in that second shot. Like, and then other times where they thought they were, like, aiming for the perfect spot. And it did seem like Phil DiGiuseppe often got himself in that, like, you know, final pass shot, like, area in front of net. Great for him to be in those situations. Maybe he's not the one that you want making that final shot.
Maybe you want, you know, Pia Suter to be getting that opportunity. And he had a sitter that he could not get past Saros. Apparently it was the stick's fault. He went and broke the stick at the bench. Got himself a new stick. He had a second opportunity. I don't know if he broke his stick, but he did not score in the second sitter that he had available to him. But Vancouver started realizing that Saros wasn't this impenetrable wall. Problem is, Saros figured out how to become that. I felt as the game progressed, like he was having to be relied on to make bigger and bigger saves. Not to suggest Seelos wasn't standing on his own head. He was, but the Seelos that we saw in Vancouver seemed to be even more confident in Nashville, like much more calm. Mm-hmm. And again, he was calm already. Like he felt like he wanted this game. And when the third period rolled around, Vancouver had learned all of these lessons and had decided, well, we're gosh darn it, the better team. And we are going to go and we're going to take charge. Like they had opportunity after opportunity. And you could almost like sense that something was just going to happen for Vancouver. Just not sure if it's going to be in time to get the game over and done with.
Yeah. It did feel like at times during the series where they had built momentum at the end of a period. And then, you know, Nashville were about to break. The levee was about to break. And then, you know, the period's over. But it almost felt like they were building towards, you know, an overtime once again.
Well, I mean, hey, it was only .136 left in the game when Pia Suter got, you know, sitter number three. And sitter number three found its way to the back of the net. And by golly, scared the dog, scared the cat, scared the neighbors.
Set off your
scared
watch.
Scared my watch.
Yeah. But, I mean, sitter as it was, like, amazing opportunity. But, like, in order to get, you know, that opportunity to get the puck to Suter, like, that was just, like, a, you know, the no-look passing play from Brock, the check dodge from Petey. Yeah.
But that was, see, this is what I think, and we'll talk more about round two in a short moment. But a lot of what people were looking at Vancouver in this series against Nashville as, oh, this is not a good team. They don't have that extra skill. They can't take it up a notch. I think that's giving significant, or a lack of significant credit to Nashville for shutting Vancouver down. Like Nashville played Vancouver as best as a team probably could play Vancouver. And what we saw in the third period, what we saw through this game as the game progressed, but specifically in the third period, was a Vancouver Canucks team that played with confidence, that maybe didn't have as much puck luck as I would like to have them have, but started to find puck luck. And, you know, to be good, you must be lucky, and to be lucky, you must be good.
Yeah.
What we saw from Vancouver and that goal is what we had expected the team to be able to do through the series.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, especially, right, like, we saw the sort of lotto line come together for much more.
Well, we saw it a few times in the series.
But, yeah, more significantly in Game 6 there. But, yeah, like, specifically Pedersen, who had himself a better game, you'd have to say, and you hope it's the start of something. But that's the thing. It's kind of, like, what we've been wanting to see from Petey is when he's not at his best, he still has that moments, those moments of star quality. And, you know, that was it, right? Like,
yeah.
Does anyone else make that smart play like he would, like he did there? Maybe Quinn Hughes, but...
Well, I was going to say, I could name maybe two or three players on the Canucks team that could probably do that. But that's, if he's back to being able to do that, I'm okay.
Yeah.
Like, if he becomes, if Petey becomes, instead of the goal producer, the setup guy, really at the end of the day, I don't care who puts the goal in the back of the net. As far as I'm concerned, Tyler Myers could get five.
Yes.
If Petey set them all up, phenomenal in my mind.
Yeah. And phenomenal in Tyler Myers' mind, I'm sure. I'm sure that's what he goes to bed dreaming about in his Canucks. Yeah.
So Suter gets the goal, 18-21, third period. I think everyone had just resigned themselves. This game is going overtime. This is going to be one of these games. It's going to go to overtime. And there doesn't seem to be a clear, you know, clear winner to be had here. It's going to be one of these games when just the goal occurs. And like, oh, my goodness, and someone goes home. Sad. Well, let's just say that that changed the dynamic significantly. Nashville was suddenly behind the eight ball with a little time left. And credit to Nashville. They were able to go and get control of the puck off the faceoff. Interestingly enough, in this game, it felt to me like Vancouver wasn't winning faceoffs, but they had like 56% to like 44 to Nashville.
Yeah,
like
that's funny. Because I also had that sense.
But Nashville did. I think they won that faceoff, got control. Saros goes straight to the bench. Nashville goes into the Canucks zoning. One of the things that we found that the Vancouver Canucks have been really good about is in that sort of, you know, disadvantaged position where there's an extra player in the ice for Nashville, whether it be on a power play, what have you. Vancouver is able to go and become what Nashville was to Vancouver. But I have to ask you, Anna, what were your thoughts on the Lindholm cross-checking penalty that was called?
Let me say weak. Like, soft, and I think that's probably being generous, but it, like, obviously it was time of heightened emotion, so, like, everything seems like, oh my god, it's complete BS, but, like, did watch it three times over before I sort of thought, well, he is making the motion, but that's... Like, that's just not what cross-checking is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's consider the entire game. So the entirety of the game, there was really only one penalty called against Vancouver. Paris. You know, Zadorov got sent off for roughing with Jankowski, whatever. 4-on-4 hockey to control the game. That happens. But Brock got sent to the sin bin for a double minor for high sticking. There are some out there that suggest that, well, Brock was in the follow through, so it's not his fault. Though having watched it, I don't feel that argument really holds much weight. But
no,
to
I agree.
Me, there's an automatic, right? Like you high sticked a player, you drew blood. You're not getting the major. You're getting the double minor.
If it bleeds, it leads to 4 minutes.
Right. Okay. So outside of that call, which is automatic, the referees had essentially said, "Hey, you two. Figure it out.
Yeah, for sure.
Figure it out." And that is often the type of refereeing we get in game sixes, game sevens, it progressively, you know, more figure it out as this, you know, Stanley Cup playoffs go on. But when they call a cross check against Lindholm, was it a cross check? I certainly feel it was. any time that that were to occur through the regular season, that's probably going to get called. But if at this point in the game, you have played a whole game of figure it out, you can't suddenly change the standard. Like, I would have had less issue with that Lindholm cross-check had, I think, a similar cross-check or board against Garland had been called earlier
in the game. Which, like, there was quite a few things that got let go, and I imagine that happens to Garland quite a bit.
And, you know,
stick up for yourself type thing.
I would even be willing to sort of cut the referees a little slack here if, let's say, Lindholm cross-checks the Nashville player. The arm doesn't go up immediately, but Vancouver gets the puck out of the zone or something like that. If it led to a significant advantage and then you threw the arm up, still, you've been calling a whole game one way. You've changed the standard. But at least I see where you were trying to allow it to go, and now you're putting yourself into a bad spot because of what you've set as precedent, not really lining up with what you should be doing. But oh my God, it was squeaky bum time, to use your words. I was indeed in full clench when that penalty got called, because we had 34 seconds of, oh my God.
Yeah, it was incredibly tense. And yeah, like I said, like, you know, when I didn't think that the first Zadorov goal was good for a win in game five, there was a minute 30 left, and I didn't think that that was good enough for a win at that point.
Well, I thought it was good enough until the penalty got called, and when the penalty got called, I'm like,
I'm far too cynical. I was tense even before that, but
I was tense, but I developed, you know, toned muscles I didn't know existed in that final 34 seconds.
Yeah, it was crazy. And, like, I just saw the end of the Dallas-Vegas series there. They were also looking...
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, by the way, in case you didn't hear about the Dallas-Vegas series, which happened now probably 24 hours ago, or 12 hours ago, once you're listening to this. But yeah, like, that was desperate, but nowhere near as desperate as the last 30 seconds of Nashville, Vancouver. Like,
yeah,
with throwing the body doesn't even cover it.
Yeah. So Nashville, 6-on-4, wins the faceoff, starts throwing the puck around, and Vancouver is quite clearly trying its best to maintain structure, but finding that that structure isn't sufficient to block all of the lanes. So they started to selectively make decisions to block a lane that suddenly was no longer necessary, thus pulling player out of sort of defensive position. I don't know who it was that had the puck on their stick, but it was Nashville at sort of the, was it the half board or hash marks, with what clearly looked to be a wide open net to the left of Seeloff's. You had Seeloff's, like, essentially throwing his body over. I want to say, was it, I don't know who it was. Was it Myers or, I can't remember who the defenseman was. There's essentially two Canucks also throwing their body in the
way. Yeah.
And don't know if the puck, there was an actual shot or if it got blocked. But then the subsequent response of, like, oh my God, you've taken your goaltender out. Now the puck's going to the opposite side of the ice. And JT Miller, who's, like, at this point lost a stick, he's got a player in a headlock because he had to take the penalty. You know, I think JT would have, you know, mugged three guys if he had to.
Yeah, I mean, 100% would. So, but the sort of sequence of event of puck to what we presumed was, like, Tyler Myers' stick or his leg, especially the way the puck came up in the air for Phil DiGiuseppe to punch out the way, but turned out to be Tyler Myers' precious items, his family jewels.
Hey, you got to use every square inch of the body to,
apparently,
to
so
make sure a dub's a dub.
Yeah, but like you say, like, all defensive systems went out the window. Like, you're playing 6-on-4. Like, she loves would maybe, yeah.
That was the most
kind of shaken
that Seeloff seemed to be throughout the game, was that moment.
Totally.
And that's not that was not a knock on him. He was, like, in full panic mode, just like sort of the rest of the team was. But Yeah, JT Miller, as I said, was given out a headlock, would have mugged players. The guy who has a whole lot of F's to give was dishing the F's out to the Nashville Predators nearby. And despite the actual horn going, the whistle blowing, Seeloff still dove to stop the last too late shot of the game. Canucks get the win. Again, I'm scaring everyone. I'm shouting at, you know, my TV. I'm sitting at home alone watching this. Because my wife and daughter are like, whatever, they went out to get groceries or something like that.
Fair enough. I mean, I did enjoy the sort of moment of victory in that, like, I was still in the office, so we were just watching it as a group, and just all the infectious joy of it, that there were people that aren't really into hockey who are just so invested in it, and then being right downtown, like, just the city lighting up. It was just amazing.
Yeah. They showed clips of the viewing party at Rogers Arena, the barn's roof, I'm surprised, is still structurally sound, having watched everyone just lose their absolute mind. Very celebratory, obviously. And then fans pouring out into Pat Quinn Plaza, and, you know, the Seeloff's chants and what have you was pretty cool to see. And, you know, you're really starting to feel this sort of playoff energy in Vancouver. It's been a long time coming, and it has been even longer since the Vancouver Canucks won a round in the play. Well, okay, let me phrase this. Bubble notwithstanding. Been a long while since Vancouver has won a round in the playoffs. So we already knew who the opponent would be if the Vancouver Canucks were to win. It was going to be the Edmonton Oilers, who just absolutely had their way with the Los Angeles Kings. I don't know how many people saw Edmonton being that dominant against LA, especially with their 1-3-1 system, which was like the, you know, modern day version of the offensive zone trap. But regardless, Edmonton has found their game at the right point of time and got an opportunity to evaluate what Nashville is doing to frustrate Vancouver. So I have to ask Anna, what are your thoughts going in to this series?
I will say, like, obviously they're not getting through, the Oilers playing like
not
this.
Canucks in four?
Not Canucks in four. Okay. Yeah, they're just, like, yes, I do think that Edmonton is still shaky on the back end. Stuart Skinner's had some good performances, for example, but, like, yeah, I don't think they're necessarily dominant there, but, like, the firepower that Edmonton has and is capable of having, maybe they didn't get to exhibit it to its full extent, but, like, that's going to, like, run over Vancouver if they're playing at this level. Which I do think they will be playing better, but they have to play a lot better. And they have to step up really big, especially as most voices are kind of saying that Demko won't make it back for round two at all.
Well, yeah, round two, or I think at all, being the more emphasized point.
I'm already face up, huh?
Yeah. So, okay, presuming Demko not going to be back for this series, if at all. Vancouver coming out of what we saw against Nashville. What do you think the result of the series will be?
Oh, God.
Putting you on the spot here.
Yeah. Like, are Canucks capable of winning this series? Definitely. Like, 100%. Like, they have. If they play at their best, it'll be a tough fought series, but they can definitely beat Edmonton. They've shown that throughout the regular season. Even with Seeloff's in net, yeah, I think they can.
Okay.
But making a prediction, which that's, I know, cool. That's what
we got to do. There isn't a fence as to which you can sit on.
Okay, I'm doing it. Be bold, Canucks in seven.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. I liked how the buildup was. They could do it, but, and it's going to have to happen, except. And then you boldly go and say, Vancouver in seven. I love the confidence there, Anne. It was yes. Oozing throughout.
Yeah, definitely. I'm so committed to that Canucks in seven call.
Yeah. I already shared my prediction on Threads, and I had said Vancouver in seven. Now, why does that happen? Well, one, I think it's important to recognize that Edmonton is a good team. The people who were to suggest that, oh, Vancouver won all four games against Edmonton in the regular season, you know, that showed how dominant they were. I think we have to take the first two games that Edmonton played and discount those entirely. That Oilers team is not the Oilers team that Vancouver then saw in the subsequent two games and who they're going to see here in the playoffs.
And yeah, let's not forget the McDavid absence as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, Edmonton did lose to Vancouver twice where they had their team available to them. But again, I think that significantly discounts what happens in a best of seven series mm-hmm. where there is no time in between. Edmonton did not have an opportunity to really adjust to Vancouver in a game-to-game sense because they had to go and consider their next opponent. And that dynamic changes. Yes, Vancouver did do the same thing. But I don't believe Edmonton is just going to be walked over. Hence why not Canucks in four. Now, I think it is very fair to say, and no one should would disagree, if Vancouver shows up to play Edmonton like they played Nashville, that series is going to end very poorly for Vancouver. Mm-hmm. Now, again, Vancouver got the job done against Nashville, but I think it's also fair to say they won games they probably shouldn't have won, and good teams have to do that. But that, again, that's not going to, I think, happen against Edmonton. But I do feel that so many people look at Vancouver, look at that microcosm of what happened in Nashville or against Nashville and say, Vancouver's not a good team. Like the number of, you know, pundits and professionals and analysts throughout there are like, oh, Vancouver's going to get walked over. Yeah. You know, I think you misunderstand how well Nashville did against Vancouver and shutting them down. I don't see Edmonton doing that. Edmonton is not a team that is structured to play the game that Nashville played. Edmonton is actually, I think, going to play the game that Vancouver would much prefer to play. Mm-hmm. I hope Vancouver doesn't go and try to do what Nashville did to Edmonton. Like, I
no,
look at what LA tried to do.
Yeah,
didn't work.
That's not how you win
a series. So you play to your strengths. And not only that, the number of people are like, oh, it's only their third string goaltender. Oh, look at Seelos. There's no way. Okay, if you're going to tell me that Seelos has not acquitted himself in the games that he has played so far to the same level of Skinner, I don't know what to say. I think DeSmith has a higher ceiling, but whether it's DeSmith or Seelos and Net, I still feel that Vancouver may have a slight advantage there. I think the Vancouver blue line, which is amazing, I'm going to suggest this, is actually a little bit better than what Edmonton has. But what Edmonton's got from that Vancouver is not showing they have yet are 2.5, 3 forward lines that can produce and a power play that is deadly.
Yeah. And that's a huge thing, right? The power play is going to be huge because as big as the penalty kill was against Nashville, like, yeah, the power play really just has to produce. Your top players have to produce. Yeah, I think you're right on the defense. I do think Canucks have the edge. Obviously, like, concern would be how Quinn Hughes' body holds up. Yeah. Especially as that's been, you know, he's flagged as a target. I honestly, like, half the time he dances around players, so he's, you know, not able to be targeted in the same way. But yes, I would be concerned about that. I know lots of players are playing hurt, probably PD included, but yeah, he's so big for the Canucks.
Yeah, there's actually a, I don't know who it was on the our CHED broadcast, but they had commented how Quinn Hughes looks like he's crying all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did see that this morning. It's just like, yeah, that's just his face. Like, yeah. Watch his sad face as he completely rocks you. Like,
yeah. I have no problem if you were to say, you know, key to the series, hit Quinn Hughes every single time. Go for it. Like, I mean, if I was playing against the Canucks, I think that might be a player I'd key in on because he's such a yeah, key component totally. Of the Canucks, you know, offensive success. I mean, arguably their best defenseman. So, yeah, that's the type of player you key in on. And I do believe that there are going to have to be an elevation of other Canuck players, specifically on the blue line. Like Zadorov, I think, has done really well at elevating his game to try to provide that little bit extra to help sort yeah. of alleviate the weight that's on Quinn's shoulders.
And I have said that also throughout, like, at the end of the regular season, that, like, Zadorov is quietly turning into some like offensive force.
So we both say Canucks in seven. How will this all play out? Well, the schedule, as we had said earlier, has been released. Game number one taking place on Wednesday, not the Tuesday, which was thought of, or JT Miller, who seemed to think it was going to be tonight. It will be 7 p.m. Pacific on Wednesday the 8th, and then the next game will be on the 10th, that being Friday, again 7 p.m. Pacific. Both those games are in Vancouver. They then go to Edmonton. There'll be a game on Sunday the 12th and Tuesday the 14th. What time? Haven't a clue. The NHL's listed as to be determined. In fact, so much is to be determined that games 4, 5, 6, and 7, there's no certainty as to what television network may be carrying those games.
Yeah, and with all due respect to the Edmonton Oilers, but what could possibly be going on in Alberta that's more exciting than the playoff series? Like, seriously, like, is there something that's happening in Rogers Place or the diaries?
Well, no, the to be determined, I think, has more to do with TV. I genuinely believe it's not the team that's saying we don't want to have a start time of such and such. It's TV. And that could very well mean that Sunday game or even the two, like, you know, if it started at 7 p.m. Mountain, that's 6 p.m. Pacific, could it start even earlier to accommodate an Eastern television audience?
Just work out great for the Canucks, honestly.
Yeah. But it comes back home on the 16th, and then, if necessary, the game 6 back in Edmonton will be on the 18th. That's a Saturday. And in game 7, if necessary, will be on Monday, the 20th of May. But, yeah, a holiday. Guaranteed that'll be an early start.
Yeah.
if there's a game 7 and a television audience is engaged. Taking a look at the rest of the league, sort of catching things up. As we had already sort of talked about, spoiler alert, the Dallas Stars figured out how to get past the Vegas Golden Knights. It was potentially going to be not an upset. Well, actually, it would have been. Vegas goes up, has the chance to knock Dallas out. Dallas goes and, you know, despite all odds, gets to Vegas in game 6 where they had the potential to beat Vegas, to eliminate them. No, Vegas gets the win. Well, moot point. Dallas was the better team at home. Dallas will be taking on the Colorado Avalanche, who, well, outside of, you know, wild game number one, Winnipeg just didn't have an answer for the Avs. And as a result, they are eliminated. So Dallas will take on Colorado. We already know the Vancouver is going to be taking on Edmonton. Edmonton just walked past the Los Angeles Kings. Heading out east, the Florida Panthers cleanly got past the, you know, Tampa Bay Lightning. Sure, the Lightning won a game, but yeah. To be honest, that was more like Florida lost it. In a game where we win, either way, the Toronto Maple Leafs pushed the series to 7. When we last recorded the episode, it was looking like Boston was going to win that series clean. But give credit to Toronto, they made Boston sweat a little. However, the Boston Bruins won game 7 in overtime. So they are going to take on the Florida Panthers and lose in 3.
Yep.
You have the Rangers, who already, you know, 4-0'd Washington, taking on the Carolina Hurricanes, who got past the Isles. And, well, that already had started. New York won tonight. They're up in the series 1-0. But looking at these, you know, four series. We already said Vancouver in seven, but who do you have coming out of Dallas, Colorado?
I'd like to say Dallas, but I mean, I already, like everyone knows, I picked Vegas to win it in seven, not because I thought they were the better team, but because Vegas in playoffs. Mm-hmm. I'd like to say, like, Dallas is such a good and entertaining team. They deserve to do better. But yeah, I'm picking Colorado still.
Colorado in what?
Six.
Oh, yeah, I got Dallas in six.
Okay.
Yeah, but
I hope I'm wrong. Like, I don't need to see Colorado win another playoff series.
Yeah.
I
feel that Dallas got that wake-up call that probably was necessary in that first round against Vegas and have now figured things out. Not to suggest Colorado isn't coming into the series with things figured out, but they maybe got through a little too easy.
Okay.
Yeah. Florida, Boston. I said Florida in three.
Yeah, I mean, I think Florida are taking it like every
day. Okay, it's not going to be a. Do you think? Okay, I honestly don't feel it'll be a sweep.
No,
this in five.
Yeah, same.
Okay. And New York, Carolina. Who do you have coming out of this series? I mean, New York's already up by one, so our prognostication's a little bit influenced by that.
Yes. God, like, even watching the highlights, they're such fast teams. Like, it's crazy watching. You just think, are they playing this at their normal speed or not? Yeah, New York, I think. Overall, I think Canes just have too many holes and don't know if the goaltending's up to it.
How many?
Seven.
Ooh, seven. I got Rangers in five.
Ooh.
Yeah, I would have I actually had Rangers in six until they won tonight. Now I have it in five.
Wow. I mean, honestly, yeah I was between. I'm between six and seven. But yeah, probably six, but I'm going to say seven because it's more fun.
Well, always fun for us to go and revisit as to, you know, the results and where we thought we would be and who ultimately got through. But that will happen at least a week or more from now. Before all of that, though, we're going to take ourselves a short break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast brought to you by Anna and Chris.
He liked to say the F word.
Oh, then get the f*** here then. Okay, see ya.
Oh. He's going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you a f***ing explanation about it. I can't.
You f*** out of here.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
If you happen to catch the post-game interview of John Cooper talking about his thoughts on the officiating that he saw in the game that Florida won, where they eliminated Tampa, John Cooper felt that Florida was getting calls because their goaltender was falling down easily. And much like many inside of sport, thought the best way to describe that as being bad is to suggest that the goaltender or players in general should wear a skirt.
Yeah. Honestly, that one felt like such a drive-by, especially if you watch the, like, this isn't an angry coach. Like, I'm sure he was upset, but he was like, this was said in the middle of a very measured, like, even tone. He was just talking about, like, this is just my opinion, but I think these calls are too soft. And the first thing he reaches for is, like, what is weak? What is associated with weakness? Oh yeah, like femininity, women. That's how you exemplify being soft and weak. And before, like, people even start throwing that out, yes, he did apologize. I will say, like, I I'm glad he did. The apology was, to me, quite lame. I'd be curious to your thoughts, because, I mean, the way he explained it was, yeah, like, I have, you know, daughters, I should be doing better. And it's like, okay, but women are people, regardless of whether you have those close to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, let's, you know, clearly state the obvious. I'm not in a position to provide any real salient understanding of what has transpired. I'm a cisgendered, you know, Caucasian male. Like, it's not my place, I feel, to go and provide a pass or not. When I heard him say that, to me, it simply reinforced what we have talked about on the show, what others have tried to elevate, is that there is still remains a cultural issue in sport, more specifically the NHL and in hockey, where misogyny somehow makes something like this permissible.
Yeah.
Prior to his apology, because of how he delivered it, I actually don't feel, and again, this is just me speaking, I don't feel he used it to try to disparage women. He simply said something he thought in his subconscious was okay. It was clearly not, right? Like he wasn't trying to tear someone down through intent, but instead, you know, used misogyny, like, because it was just second nature. It was, it's a permissible action.
It was just like that easy reach reference almost, you know, like,
yeah.
The fact that that came to mind to him, like, yeah, like you say, I don't think he was being intentionally disparaging to women. But the thing is, it's the culture that surrounds you, right? Like, you know, we've talked about it before. And I know, like, you know, our friend of the show, Brock McGillis, has talked about it before. But it's the kind of, like, frame of reference, right? Like, our players, like, try to be homophobic when they use the F word as a slur. Not in, like, they're not consciously doing that, but the fact that that's, like, part of the culture. Yeah, it was really disappointing, and obviously part of that disappointment was not just, like, that he said that, but the online reaction to spring to his defense about it.
Yeah, and that is the problem manifesting itself over and over. Like, when he apologized, whether I'm out of left field or not, I felt that his apology was meant to be genuine.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I said it. Didn't even occur to me that it was a problem at the time. In retrospect, I done screwed up. But as I've talked about on our podcast before, why are you not, in acknowledging that you've screwed up, sharing what you're going to do to help remedy the problem? Instead of trying to, as you point out, like, well, I have daughters, I should know better. I have a daughter, I should know better too. And I'm doing what I feel I can to remedy the problem. To, like, this is language that is no longer in my vernacular.
Yeah.
And I will be the first to admit, when I was younger, it was present because I didn't know any better. I grew up in a very similar male, masculine dominated sport. And it wasn't actually until I started officiating collegiate soccer, where someone had gone and used that specific term in a women's soccer match that I officiated. And I couldn't correlate it because I just witnessed some of the most competitive, hard-nosed soccer.
Yeah.
And what you're trying to describe to me doesn't, like, it and then is like the light bulb went on. And then as I've grown as a person, I'm trying to do more to excise misogyny, that male masculine machismo,
and
out of it, what little I can. And I don't have the influence John Cooper has.
No, exactly. And that's huge, because I do think I'm the same. Like, I grew up in a very, like, because I watched football a lot growing up, and it was just so easy to just, like, describe any player going down easy or, spending too much time on their hair, just like anything like that, any male player doing that, you know, like, oh, he's such a girl about it. He's like, and just really using that language myself. And it's so damaging, I think. But like, that's what you heard on commentary, like, you know, when they talk about players shoving each other, they'll say like, oh, it's handbags. And I just like, that's still so acceptable.
I watched a broadcast talk about the Whitecaps match we went to, when one of the Austin FC players ran towards the Whitecaps bench. It's unclear as to what transpired there, but the term handbags was used. Oh, there was, you know, a bunch of players went to handbags at half, and like what are you trying to imply?
Yeah, like it's just the implications, and like you say, like. Yes, I'm glad John Cooper apologized, but like, I would like to see him do more and people in authority do more to change the culture. I point to Friends Show, the broadcast, when they had Roman Yossi and Mark. What is Mark's surname? Borokop. What is his actual surname? Anyway, Nashville player at the time. Who were very intelligent about that and about them being the ones to change the culture. It's not just like the people making the mistakes that need to change the culture. It's everyone. And yeah, I think he could do some more work for John Cooper. Yeah. But yeah, like you say, it's just the fact that that's happening and the discourse after it was pretty disappointing. And I will say, like, that's kind of just part of a larger thing, you know, like earlier this week we had Sarah Sivian, who's like just a woman in sports media, just like having every just comment she made questioned. And it's just like, do you know how much effort that women in hockey media and sports media put into making sure that like whatever they're hearing or whatever they're thinking is correct? Like, the amount of times I don't tweet something because I'm like, wait, is that right? Let me look that up. And then I check it. It's right. Like, it is. But
she had commented about Demko being out for the playoffs.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is what she shared is what I had heard from people I trust much earlier. She is much more connected than I will ever be.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to suggest that that is the case. I mean, what she is sharing is based on the information that has been provided to her and those that she trusts. Very similar to how I approach it. But if I were to go and share that, people might call me out. But guess what? They're going to give me a pass because I'm a guy, Anna.
Yeah. It's just
and that
like
is just unbelievably. I won't say unbelievably insane, but it's not because it happens all the time and I see it.
And it's not like people necessarily were directly commenting, oh, like, well, what do you know? You're a woman. It's not like that happened, but it's just that it's just the immediate, it's just the environment, right? And it's just everything feeds into each other. Yeah. The other one thing I just wanted to bring up before we close this out, I'm not going to refer directly to this person, but there's been someone in Vancouver Canucks player in the recent past who I would say like has done enough to never be mentioned in this town again. And I just wish that was the case. And I want to put it out there this is another kind of unthinking moment, is that every time his name, and everyone knows who I'm talking about, everyone knows which player of the recent past from Vancouver itself I'm talking about. Every time his name gets brought up, and it'll be like in reference to, you know, him not being as like being a bit of a bust or his playing style and his failings. I don't want to hear it. Like, there's just so many other ways to talk about it, and you're really not. I wish you knew what you were doing when you, like, I wish Malmedia knew what they were doing when they brought up his name. Because it's, like, re-traumatizing. Like, I can't imagine what it's like for the victim of this. But, mm-hmm. like, it's for every woman who has yeah. experienced some kind of sexual assault or anything near it. It's traumatizing, and I just wish it would... I wish there was more awareness for that.
Yeah, I wish I had an answer, but the one thing I feel I can contribute, I'm not a male member of the media, but I'm a male, is that my gender will never have to experience even a small percentage of what women or those who are not male
yeah.
experience. And while we're not in the position to truly be able to relate, we should do a far better job at recognizing not being in the position that can to rely on those who are.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll leave it here. Like, we don't want to choose the bear. We wish we didn't have to, but the reality is the bear is the safer option.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Anna. You know, we've talked about this in the past. We'll talk about it now. We'll talk about it again in the future. Hockey, but sport in general, needs to progress and change. And I think the best way it can go about doing that is if more of us, more of me, simply ask the question, or maybe more make the statement, tell me more. And listen.
Right.
And that, you know, to loop back to John Cooper's casual misogynistic remark, he said it in a press conference. If you want to go and suggest that as much he was even keeled and calm, that the emotions were raw, okay, great. He knows who he's in front of. He receives training
yeah.
and how to manage what you say and the messages to which you're delivering. And yet so casually dropped a misogynistic term. Can you imagine what happens when the guard is down, when the right. cameras are not on, when the microphones are not present? And that's not to, again, say that he or anyone else is going out of their way. But when that, you know, attention is not present, how prevalent must this be?
Yeah.
Because nothing becomes that comfortable to say in front of the world if it's not already super comfortable to use elsewhere. And that's wrong. Oh. In a happier note, we get Canucks hockey on Wednesday. The Raj is going to be hopping. Vancouver is going to take on Edmonton. I said Canucks in seven. You said Canucks in seven. If it goes seven games, there'll be a lot of squeaky bums. And yeah. It's our podcast term now. I don't know of any other Canucks podcast out there that refers to the squeaky bums like we do. I don't know. Is that a badge of honor? Like longest running, best mediocre, squeakiest bums?
Sure. It's a differentiator. I'm not sure it's a badge of honor, but we'll take it.
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, hey, when you're the, you know, best of 132 podcasts at being mediocre, you got to differentiate. But if you've reached this point of the show, thanks for tuning in, obviously. It's a little bit longer. We obviously had to talk a lot about what was going on in the world of Vancouver Canucks hockey and a pretty serious topic at the end. We hope you do tune in again to our show next week. As the schedule is laid out, we may have an episode that will then be published on Monday, as it normally would, so Monday the 13th. But that is all dependent on whatever time the Oilers take on the Vancouver Canucks on the 12th. We don't know that time yet because, as the NHL has published, it is to be determined. Once we know, we will publish on social media what our schedule might be. So don't be too alarmed if you wake up on the Monday morning or you're having lunch and the episode's not. That's not us. It's just we're trying to accommodate a fluid playoff mm-hmm. schedule.
Yeah.
Speaking of social media, we are on Twitter at the C4 Podcast. We're on Threads at the real C4 Podcast because, again, couldn't get the C4 Podcast there. And our website has been updated, the C4podcast.com. You can go check it out. It has broken the forward for those of you who might want to support a show, which I will hopefully remedy in the relatively near future. But if you were to go to buymeacoffee.com/C4podcast, which takes you to what's called Buy Me a Coffee, or as Anna and I like to refer to it as,
Buy Me a Pint.
You can drop a couple of bucks our way. A couple of bucks as a one-off helps us go buy a pint or two. But if you like the show so much and you want to contribute a little bit more, you can subscribe to our show monthly or yearly. Yearly gets a little bit of a discount on the monthly rate over the course of 12 months. And those that do get themselves an exclusive C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast sticker, which I will mail to you or whatever address you wish me to send it to. So again, we do try to reward those who do support us. Anna, any final words of wisdom?
Focusing on the good side. Like, I think anyone that was around Vancouver on Friday night, around Scott Road in Surrey, or just online in the Canucks Twitter space or wherever it was, can see how wonderful and fun sport can be. So it's nice to have those moments too.
Yeah. Sort of segueing from social media and being fun, I want to remind everyone, when conversing with fans of the opposing team on social media, choose kindness. I know it's a big ask for those in the Canucks space as well as in the Oilers space, but please think about what you say, because what you say will matter, and what you say online is there forevermore. But if you have nothing nice to say, don't say it. Don't get baited into things. I share this from a place of kindness.
Of course.
If you have something nice to say, or maybe you have something nice not to say about our show, you can do so at C4 Discord, discord.io/C4podcast. You can also reach out to us through all the different medium that we exist on. You can like and subscribe to our show. You could leave us a review. It's been a long time since we've had one, so maybe it's not a good show and you need to tell everyone that it isn't. We will still read your review on an upcoming episode. We just might poke fun at it if it's like, you know, not like 5 out of 5 stars, show sucks. That's actually a good review.
Yeah,
but if it's 0 out of 5 stars, you know, must not subscribe. Well, then, hey, we'll probably poke fun at that. But on behalf of Anna, A4Size03, myself, Chris at Lightforce, we out.